Welcome to The How of Business with your host, Henry Lopez, the podcast that helps you start, run, and grow your small business. And now, here is your host.
Welcome to this episode of The How of Business. This is Henry Lopez, and my guest today is Kelly Thornton. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Henry. Looking forward to talking to you today.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting conversation. Kelly's going to share a little bit about his journey, his entrepreneurial journey, how he got to where he is today. But then we're going to focus on his learnings, his experiences that he's going to share on scaling his most recent business, Tiege Handley. We'll explain what they do, but they are a direct-to-consumer men's skincare product company. If you want to get more information about the How of Business, including the show notes page for this episode, and you'll want to make a note of that because we have a special offer from Tiege Handley, a special promo code. So you'll go to the show notes page, as well as on my website, you can find information about my one-on-one and group coaching programs, and that's all at thehowofbusiness.com. I also encourage you to please subscribe to my show wherever you might be listening so you don't miss any new episodes. So let me tell you more about Kelly. Kelly Thornton was born in Towson. Is that how you pronounce it? Towson, Maryland?
Towson, Maryland.
Towson, Maryland. And then moved to Connecticut for high school and started a painting business. Was that during high school or during college?
It was actually in high school and then all the way through college.
Got it. And so started the painting business and graduated with a degree in economics from the University of Connecticut in 1990. Debt-free, very important point there. He began his career in sales then in New York City and then transferred to Chicago, where he still lives today, a few years later after that first start in New York City. And then after a successful 19-year career in corporate America, he left the industry to begin his second company, Purchase Point LLC, which was an in-store design and strategy company with offices in U.S., London, and in Taiwan. Throughout his experience at Purchase Point, he was inspired by the rapidly growing men's care industry and founded his third company, Tiege Handley Incorporated, in 2016. Tiege Handley is an e-commerce company with the mission of helping men look and feel amazing. With the help of Aaron Marino, a YouTuber with over 6 million followers, and Rob Hoxie, the business has evolved organically with over 500,000 customers globally and over 100 million in lifetime sales. So once again, Kelly Thornton, welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you for that intro.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Sounds impressive, right?
Yeah, it did sound pretty impressive. Did you? I mean, I don't know where that came from, but that was great.
You've done some things. So tell me, let's early life, obviously you went to school. Did you think when you were in university, you would be a business owner?
Well, I started a club at the University of Connecticut called the Young Entrepreneurial Professional Club. So yeah. I think it was already, the seeds were there. The mustard right. seeds had been planted.
And you had the painting business, of course, but often people will do that just as a way of making money without necessarily aspiring to have a business after school, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a bit of a euphoria you get when you realize that you can make money. You know, you can control your financial destiny by making money in other ways than just, you know, working for someone else. And you can have kind of some control over how you make money. And for some people like me, that's kind of a very exciting idea.
But nonetheless, you went into the corporate world. Why did you make that decision?
I actually was very encouraged by my father. And I don't think that was a bad decision. It certainly wasn't a bad decision. I was very much encouraged. I remember the first day I was going to work, and there's a bit of backstory. It's probably not that interesting, but I did start working right out of University of Connecticut for at the company that my father worked for, and he was in a packaging. Went to purchase packaging and display company in Newark, New Jersey, servicing CPG companies and companies that were buying value-added packaging in the New York metropolitan area. I remember going the first week, driving with my father to work, and he said to me, I actually remember exactly where we were on Route 78, for those listeners that know Northern Jersey, heading in towards Newark International Airport. And heading down the hill, and the Warren area. And I looked over at my father and said, I'm not sure if I want to do this. I think I'd rather own my own business. And he said to me, you know, get some years of experience, get some money, make some money, and think about what you want to do. And I said, well, that sounds like a pretty good plan. So I stuck with it really at the same company. I was at that first company for a year and a half. I ended up getting fired from that company. There were six of us that signed on for sales training, 6 months of sales training, and then went right into sales. There were six of us, two of those people left, you know, within the first year. And then the other four of us all got fired at the same time, almost exactly a year and a half later. And then I went with International Paper, or a company that became International Paper, you know, $20, $30 billion at the time, packaging and forestry company. And I was there for 18 years. I had a very good career with them. It took me longer than I expected to leave corporate.
To leave. Where, I mean, I was in sales as well. And one of my challenges was I was making very good money. And so it was hard to leave that, even though, you know, I was frustrated with a lot of things. I was tired of somebody setting what my limit was, what my value was, the control, all of those things that typically motivate us as entrepreneurs. Was that part of the challenge for you, was letting go of that, you know, predictable, or at least much more predictable income?
That was exactly it. I mean, you couldn't have teed it up better, really, Henry. That is exactly what happened. I was, I had actually planned on retiring 2 years, not quite 2 years. Well, I'd started 2 years prior to when I actually left. I wrote a business plan.
Is that right?
I played around with the business plan for months and months and months. Then I finally came to the, you know, accept the fact that this is going to happen. I'm going to do it. I've made up my mind. And I even remember calling just for some small things, calling the HR department, finding out kind of what was going to happen, like, you know, with any type of pension or anything I had, and understanding, you know, COBRA. And it took me another full year after that. And it was all driven because of exactly what you said. I had huge opportunities. I was, you know, was pretty good at what I was doing. Had huge opportunities, and I was closing on those opportunities. And it was taking, you know, 6-10 months for me to be, you know, paid out. Mm-hmm. And so it was significant, very, very significant money. As a matter of fact, I can't understate the importance of the ability to make money early on in my career.
Yeah.
To my entrepreneurial journey. Had I not made the money that I made early on, I wouldn't have been able to launch and sustain businesses through, you know, good times and bad.
But that's got to mean that you didn't adjust your lifestyle to live to that income. You put enough of it away to put you in a financial position to be able to take this step.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable looking back, because generally speaking right now, I don't have a ton of net worth. I have a lot of net worth in my business. I mean, but looking at it from back 20 years ago, I had a significant amount of capital, you know, cash in the bank. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I needed it for my children's education and to get through bad times. And there were some really tough times in, you know, 10 to 12 years of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So what was the tipping point then that led you to start that first business? It sounds like it was an accumulation of things. So it wasn't one thing, but what were, generally speaking, what were those things that were just, you had enough and you have to go do this?
Yeah. I'm somewhat embarrassed to tell you this, Henry, because, and you've already, again, teed it up, but you know, I was really motivated by winning and success, like winning in business, success and money. So I had, you know, I was really motivated by maximizing my earning potential. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that that's a bad thing. It's just, nope. It's not like I can't come to you and tell you that I wanted to remove all the plastic out of the oceans. And that's why, left my business. But I was really motivated by money. And I got to, again, without going into a whole bunch of detail, I was in a situation where I had already kind of like decided to leave. I was in a situation where I was looking very, very closely at the P&L, the organization that I was in. I was with International Paperboard. I was in a division. And I noticed, and the reason why I was so engaged in this was because I was doing an RFP for my biggest client, and it was our biggest client within the entity, within the division I was in. It was a very, very, very substantial piece of business, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars. And I was looking very closely to the P&L and the P&L on my book of business. And because of that, because of the company too. Yeah. And I realized that this is a big organization. There's hundreds of people in this organization, or a couple hundred people, and, you know, up to full like 30 sales reps. And I realized at that point, which was in June of 2008 or 2009, I realized that I was single-handedly responsible for, you know, about 65 to 70% wow. of all the sales, and like 80 some percent of the below the line, basically EBITDA mm-hmm. at the company. And I was actually disgusted by that. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, this is crazy. And what was happening, why I was looking at all this, because my costs were highly inflated. And the reason why my costs were highly inflated was because I was the one with the business at the company that was keeping the lights on. And so the company kept on putting more and more cost into my accounts, mm-hmm. and I couldn't sustain it. I mean, I was trying to figure out how to remove as much cost as possible and be very competitive in the marketplace. And I wasn't able to, and I was just kind of disgusted by all that. And I was like, you know, if I could bring in tens of millions of dollars in sales, and this is through June, and bring in this type of contribution margin to the company, more than that, it was more than contribution margin. It was actually EBITDA, that I could do a fraction of that for myself and be very happy and not have to, you know, deal with all this other crap that I'm dealing yeah. with. So that was that, that's what did it. And it just really put me over the edge, you know? And so, yeah. And unfortunately, I was not very impressed with like corporate America. I mean, just at least the team that I was with wasn't performing at a level that I thought that they should be for a long period of time.
Now, all of these things resonate with me, and I'm sure with a lot of the listeners. You know, first of all, thank you for sharing and not unabashedly that money is the driver. You know, I think that we are, especially here, I don't know, in the last 10 years or so, we are led to believe, go do what you're passionate about, go save the world, you know, give away one shoe for every shoe you make. And those are all great things. But the reality is that as entrepreneurs, we want to make money. And now we want to do it the right way. And we want to help our communities as much as it makes sense. But that is the driver. We want to have the ability to make as much as we want and need, right? And that yeah, is a yeah. driver, and it should be.
Yeah, I think I live in Chicago, and there's difficult conversations being had here. You know, economic conversations being sure. had, because the city's not, you know, it's not run very well. And I mean, we have, you know, junk bonds in the state of Illinois. And I think there's like, you know, there's this little bit of thing going on here in Chicago where, you know, if you are successful in business and you have your own business, you know, that may be a bad thing, you know, mm-hmm. and you're not contributing enough. It's just the opposite.
Right.
You know, T.J. Hanley is a sizable business. It's not massive, but it's a decent sized business. We employ a lot of people.
Yeah. You buy things from a lot of other people.
We create a lot of revenue. You know, we pay a lot of taxes in every state in the country, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes. And, we do a lot of good. And not just that, a lot of business owners, you know, they have the ability to do good. Yes. And it doesn't need to be like I was joking about before. Well, it doesn't need to be like, you know, removing plastic from the ocean. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could just do good by doing the right thing,
yeah.
doing the right yeah. thing for our customers, doing the right thing for our employees, setting the right tone of how to act in business, being ethical, having, you know, good character. I mean, these things are really important. And unfortunately, you know, we get a little villainized that business is bad and making money is bad. And, earning, you know, and developing wealth is a bad thing. I don't get it. You know, yeah, I think people just aren't connected with the reality of what it's like.
And I think that maybe that's exacerbated here recently, but I think it's always kind of been a challenge, not, you know, the boomers is us. So, but anyway, that's for another episode.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What then, briefly tell me, what brings you then to the skincare, especially men's skincare industry? What sparked that?
Well, you know, we are much more mission driven than anything I've ever done. I mean, Tej Hanley. So what sparked it is my purchase point, which we didn't talk a lot about, but my international in-store design and strategy company. I'm basically a shopper marketing company. Are super fortunate to do business with global CPGs in the pharma, OTC pharma, confection, such as, you know, Candy Bar and Wrigley and Mars and Hershey. Mm-hmm. And then a ton of CPG work, a lot of personal care, deodorants, beauty, cosmetics. And, I just really felt like there's a huge opportunity for U.S. males to think about the way they're taking care of their skin. Because it was happening everywhere else in the world and wasn't really, the U.S. consumer wasn't connecting with it.
Interesting.
And I thought there's a great opportunity. I mean, in other parts of the world, there's like, you know, and you go into a typical like C-store and there'd be, 5 feet long by 5 feet high of male consumer products. You go into a C-store here, there might be like, two Dove deodorants, mm-hmm. or two, and Old Spice in your local store. And that was it. And I'm like, this is coming to America. And then just overarching, like the way men are thinking about themselves, if there's some cultural changes, and it's really revolves around a men's health, that it's important for a guy to take care of himself. So I thought for all these reasons, I really thought this was a great opportunity.
Yeah, a great opportunity and a great gap. Where does the name come from?
Yeah, it's right out of my family Bible. So the Hanley name is surname of myself. And on my grandparents' side, my grandmother's side, the Hanleys, and they're right out of Connacht, Providence, in eastern central part of probably the Midlands of Ireland. And, it's just random. I just like the name. And
So both names, Tej and Hanley, is a family, are family names.
Actually, it is it's right out of my family Bible. Like they used to pen write them into the back, 30 pages. It was like a family tree, and the name Tej Hanley was right there from the 1400s.
It's an interesting name in that, of course, naming nowadays is difficult because, all of the obvious names are taken. You got to make sure that you have a website, the URL needs to match, all of that stuff. But it's not an easy name because there's some friction there as to how you spell it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get some pushback, especially like from your partners on that?
Early on, they were they didn't like it. I mean, I was thinking, well, look, there could be a Paul Mitchell and a Vidal Sassoon and on and on and on. So there could be a Tej Hanley, the most interesting Irish man in the world. And, they didn't really like it. It's a 5-letter URL. Actually, I found out it's just the opposite of what we expected. So if you type in anything that's close to Tej, you'll find it.
Yeah. So it benefits you that way because there's nothing else it's going to be confused with.
Yeah. It's not like it's like a variation of ketchup, and everybody's looking for something and misspelling it and getting, Heinz ketchup, right? It's like, there's not a lot of other stuff out there like Tej.
Love it. Why did you partner?
I partnered because that's an awesome question. I had never had a partner in business. I partnered because I needed a voice in the market, AKA I needed to be the ability to have to sell our product. I think it's we started off talking about our careers in sales. It's the number one thing. You have to be able to sell your product.
Right.
You have to have a product that people are interested in buying, and then you have to be able to sell it. And, Leonard Lutter from Estee Lutter said, you can make any, a great product. You can sell any product once. You have to have a great product for it to be, sold over and over again. And like having that voice to sell one product I didn't have. So I brought on Aaron Marino. He's a YouTuber. And this is from, you know, we're going back here to 2015 when I first met him. And he had, you know, hundreds of thousands of guys. His channel is focused on kind of the broad topic of what it means to be a man, like what to wear for a date, you know, why you should work out, how do you work out, you know, why, you know, getting drunk and texting a girl is a bad idea, you know, all of this stuff. And
yeah, he's a character. Now, is he still involved in the business?
He is, and he's a stakeholder in the business.
Okay.
He's a shareholder in the business, and he is heavily engaged. I mean, I either talk to him or, you know, or text with him daily, but he is, we run EOS, and he's in our, you know, our weekly level 10.
Got it. EOS is what you mean by EOS, right? So the
Correct.
Entrepreneur Operating System. Excellent. This is Henry Lopez, briefly pausing this episode to invite you to join me for one of my next live online workshops. During these interactive workshops, I cover a specific topic that will help you with starting and growing your small business. Just visit thehowofbusiness.com to learn more and to register. If you need help creating an effective business plan, for example, to start your first small business, then my next business plan workshop may be just what you need. Or perhaps you need help completing your financial projections for your new business. Well, I have a workshop for that too. And if you're already operating your business, then you can probably benefit from learning how to better manage the cash in your business by attending my cash flow management online workshop. These are just a few of the workshops that I currently offer, and I keep these workshops to a small number of participants so that we have the time to answer all of your questions. Whether it's getting started with your first business or growing and exiting your existing small business, I can help you get there with one of my online workshops. To find out more and to register for a live online workshop, please visit thehowofbusiness.com. Take that next step today towards finally realizing your business ownership dreams. I look forward to having you join me for my next workshop. Did the route of the influencer marketing, was that something that was purposeful and at the heart of the launch from day one, or did that come later? Tell me about that.
Well, it's 100% core of how we got to where we are, but it wasn't purposeful. It was, well, you know, let me rephrase that. It was intentional in the sense that that we wanted Aaron to help us talk about the brand. And when I say us, another partner of mine is a gentleman named Rob Hoxie, who I went to high school in Connecticut with my last couple of years, and then to UConn with. And then we were just friends, and he was at a tech doing business development. He was at a tech firm. Had a background, and he felt like he could help us out on the e-com side. So on the technology side. But it was purposeful in the sense that, you know, we wanted Aaron to talk about our business. We want to have a voice in the market. What was unknown to me was that Aaron, not only was his reach amongst customers, you know, to reach customers a very good thing, but his kind of stardom within that genre of influencers was very popular. So it really enabled us to scale quickly with a lot of other influencers. We're talking about like males topics. And that really supercharged our growth early on.
Did you decide from day one that the model was going to be direct to consumer exclusively?
Yeah. It's kind of ironic because I'd been spending
right
my entire career on how to
package and how to merchandise and all of that good stuff at retail locations, right?
Yeah, I mean the challenges is like the difference between DTC and going, you know, wholesale retail is like, you know, it's just like night and day difference. It's so incredibly different. They're so dramatically different businesses. I really wanted to have a direct relationship with our customer, That was like super important to me.
Okay.
And I think maybe it was because of all the years at Purchase Point doing shopper marketing and paying shoppers to understand how they think and watching shoppers and everything else. I really want to have a great understanding of shopper, of our customer, and a good relationship with our customer. Right? When you buy a product and you're not happy with it, you buy it at Target, like you're not going back to Unilever. Like right. You buy a chunk of Ben and Jerry's, you know, there's news out yesterday that Unilever is going to divest at them over after having pure global dominance over ice cream. But, you know, you're not going back to Unilever and saying, hey, guys, like, you know, this ice cream wasn't as good. You're taking back to Target. I mean, so, you know, and I really wanted to have a relationship with the customer. And so that's what was really appealing to me with DTC.
But the challenge, though, then is getting found online initially is such a barrier, right? Because at least when you do get, if you do get some shelf space or you go place yourself in a boutique, they're bringing the audience to you. When we start online, nobody knows who we are. So that's why I was asking about the influencer approach. How did you initially get found online?
Well, the initial, so, you know, Aaron continued to grow from when we met him rapidly. Mm-hmm. So he had, you know, a massive voice. I mean, Aaron has well over a billion lifetime video views. Crazy. So when you have that type of reach, I mean, you know, you're talking about like, you know, reruns of, you know, of probably not as much, but reruns of like, you know, Seinfeld or something.
Sure,
I mean, you just got, you know, you have just a tremendous reach. And Aaron is really, you know, has a lot of engagement from his audience. So it allowed us to reach, you know, millions of people and convert millions of people.
But if I understood you correctly, this came a little later, or did I miss that point? Did you start with Aaron and others from day one, or was it initially? Okay. All right. So from day one, you as it turned out, yeah.
Let me be a little clearer. I launched Tiege Hanley with the idea of selling a skincare routine to guys over the internet. I engaged with Rob, who I mentioned before, to help me with that business. We launched that business in the summer of 2015 as a side project to Purchase Point. Rob was managing it. It was not, basically, it was not successful. And there was two reasons why it wasn't successful. It wasn't successful because primarily 99% of the problem was we didn't have a voice in the market, as you just mentioned. The other reason why is we were curating really interesting and great skincare products that were not ours. Right. So they were acne skincare and bulldog skincare and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So those were our problems. And it was a routine, but it wasn't a subscription. We reached out to Aaron and we said to Aaron, hey, we're really interested in having you help us reach consumers. He said he was into the idea, but he wanted two things. One is he wanted us to develop our own brand, the Tiege Hanley brand, and he wanted to make it a subscription business. Aaron brought the customers and that kind of thinking around, you know, around how do we go to market with our own brand. We kept the idea of education. We kept the idea of a routine. And then it took us another year until the summer of 2016 to launch. And during that year, Aaron was helping us build an audience. And when we launched, we had thousands of guys already signed up, ready to go. And then it just kept on escalating.
Yeah. So that was really Tiege Hanley 2.0. Now you had to go formulate a product. And so now we're talking about a whole different scale here versus curating. Now, how did you fund then that next iteration of the business?
Yeah. Well, it was funded all out of my pocket. That's what one of the several things that I brought to the table besides the idea.
No loans.
Excuse me?
No loans. You didn't borrow any money.
No loans at all. You know, I brought capital to the table. I brought my experience in personal care and marketing and branding, running a business, and then we got super fortunate on a couple of things. And we got really lucky with Aaron. By the way, Aaron, we wanted to pay Aaron to help us with the business. And he came back to us and said, back to Rob and I, and said, I think you know, I think it really makes sense for me to be a partner and not take any money from you guys, but to actually contribute through sales and earn my stake in the company based on that. And it was, you know, it was a beautiful thing because, you know, looking back, I didn't even think about raising. It wasn't on the, wasn't really my thought, but in essence, we exchanged, you know, ownership shares in the business to, you know, to Aaron in exchange for sales. It was a really, just a fantastic win-win situation.
Yeah. I can imagine.
On the product side, we got super, super lucky. My business partner, Rob, was in Connecticut playing golf, and he happened to be playing golf with a guy he had known before who was a chemist, a cosmetic chemist, had been formulating chemist cosmetics in New York for the best, you know, beauty houses his entire career. Wow. So he was in for, you know, a very small, you know, few shares of the business to develop our formulas. And he still consults with us every month, and he's, you know, still a very small minority owner. But he was critical in developing phenomenal products. So we paid him in equity to develop the products and help us get them in the original manufacturing, which we did with a third-party manufacturer.
Had tremendous things that fell into place, but you know, I always say that the take, we do need a little bit of luck sometimes in business, but I think that we can get in the way of luck by connecting with people, by understanding and exploring what the opportunities might be. Again, that's one of the reasons why you partnered, to leverage those different skills and connections, and that's how it all comes together, isn't it?
That's exactly correct. Okay. It was just really very, very fortunate. And I got to say, I mean, I still have like phenomenal partners in my business, both Rob and Aaron.
Why does it work? Why do the partnerships work? Because that's the challenge. I prefer working in partnerships, but so many partnerships can go wrong for all kinds of different reasons. What do you think are one or two reasons why you guys have been able to make it work?
Yeah, I mean, I love that question so much. Very, very few people have ever asked me that. I think like in the very beginning, and when I mean very beginning, I mean, when, you know, I said to Aaron, I'm going to rewrite our business plan. I'm going to come down to Atlanta where Aaron is. Rob and I are going to come down there. We're going to talk out the business plan. In the very, very beginning, it was very clear what all three of us needed, you know, kind of like financially, what we wanted, how much equity we all needed to make it work. It was very clear up front. And there was not a lot of back and forth negotiating on that, to the extent that someone would be, you know, feel bitter about something down the road. And that is, you know, that's a big, big deal. Then it was also very, very clear up front what the goal of the company was. Like, it was really clear up front. Ironically, on that issue, we didn't all three agree completely. Two of us agreed completely, and one of us was half on board. And it's remained that way to this day, but the guy that's been half on board has committed 100% to our partnership. He has not looked back. And then thirdly, and equally as important as the other two, is that we had like a very clear, you know, who was going to run the business.
Yeah, the delineation of roles.
Roles was super clear. Mm-hmm. So that, and that was like right up front. That happened right up front. I mean, I said like, look, you know, here's my intention. This is what I want to do. You know, I'm going to run this business. This is how I'm going to run it. And I'm going to always defer to you guys. But, you know, I really need a lot of, you know, a lot of autonomy to make decisions and blah, blah, blah. And they were good with that. And then we got an operating agreement, you know, shortly after that, before we launched, but after our agreement, our handshake agreement. And, you know, and then, so and as soon as we got an operating agreement, we had those three things worked out. You know, it's been for the most part, smooth sailing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's really valuable. Going back for a moment to the funding, as you've grown, have you brought in any lending, any outside sources, or has it just been reinvestment?
It's all been organic growth. I mean, wow. We've really been fortunate. We've made money, and we've invested that money into the business. And I mean, We've had one year that was pretty tough. 2021 was a tough year for us. We ended up fortunately, you know, getting a little bit of bank debt and, you know, and
just like an LOI, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. Just basically like a line of credit, an LOC. And we got a little bit of bank debt that we were able to, you know, kind of pay down. And, you know, it's, and we've continued to get, short-term bank debt, and very modest amounts. I mean, we have a pretty significant line of credit right now, but, you know, we only use a very small fraction of it. And so we've got debt there to manage cash flow issues and to be, we've been very, 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 very cash efficient as a DTC company, which is super hard to do. And, I mean, we have, you know, we're in a high margin business and we've been profitable. So, that's how it's worked.
That's wonderful. Thanks for sharing that. When someone, I'm sure, approaches you and say, "Hey, I've got an idea for a product," and ask her, you know, "How do I get started?" What do you recommend to someone who's got an idea? Maybe it's a personal care product, and they have no idea how to get started. What do you recommend they do first?
Well, figure out how you're going to sell it. You know, how exactly you're going to sell it. And it's like, if you don't have a voice in the marketplace, and I use that word very generally, like a way to sell and reach a lot of people, you know, digital marketing itself, like being a DTC brand, takes a lot of cash.
Yeah, it takes a lot of resources that we usually don't have, because you're a needle in the haystack, right? And that's something people think because it's so easy, "Oh, I'll just put up my Shopify website and people will come." Well, not unless you've got an audience that you can promote it to. And that's what you're talking about when you say a voice in the market, right?
That's correct. I mean, I would say, like, if this is how you should think about it, if you're thinking about a brand, you know, creating a brand and putting it online, it's more of using a jackhammer every day against a wall of granite. That's more what it's like to get customers. It's more like that. I mean, you're every single day, you're just banging it out. And you have to have an economic model to figure out how to do that. I mean, you have to understand that if you know, the cost of acquiring a customer and, you know, the contribution margin and payback period of that, you know, of that customer, the value of that customer and how you're going to actually make money. So, it's really hard. I mean, honestly, I strongly encourage people to try it. You know, if you've got a great product in mind, I think you can go to, and the product needs to solve a problem. You know, it needs to just clearly solve a problem. It doesn't need to be something that's never been thought of before. Like, you could go out there and sell ice cream if you were just doing it better and solving some problem. Like, you know, an ice cream that doesn't melt between the store and your house or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you just need to solve a problem. You need to make a very good product that's slightly better, at worst, slightly better than most of the other products that are out there. You know, you need to figure out how you can cost effectively develop and manufacture that product. And there's a lot of people like ice cream, you know, there's probably like people they want to make your ice cream for you. So they'll help you develop the ice cream that you want. And you can put your name on it and, you know, and sell it. And so you can kind of somewhat get into it and see whether or not you have a voice and get an audience that are interested in buying your product to solve the problem.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for those insights. Those are great tips and perspective. Okay. I probably should have started with this, but give us the 30-second elevator pitch on the products and the services that you do offer today.
Yeah. I mean, we're experts in skincare routines. So we're really helping guys think about just the basics of taking care of their skin, which is, you know, washing your face with something other than a bar soap or the the Dial soap that's sitting next to your, you know, in a little soap dispenser next to your sink, using just like a high quality, you know, face wash. Obviously I recommend T. Shanley, but, you know, Kiehl's makes a great face wash. There's a few others out there that are really pretty good. And then making sure you moisturize. So these are the two things. So you want to wash your face with a very high quality face wash that doesn't damage your skin. And you want to moisturize. So in the morning, you get up, you brush your teeth, you wash your face, You put in our T. Chanley AM moisturizer. It has SPF in it. It yep. doesn't matter if you live in Florida or Chicago or Toronto. It doesn't matter if it's December or June. You need to have some amount of SPF to protect your face and your skin from getting burned. And then you just repeat at night. So you wash your face and you put a nighttime moisturizer on, which we call our PM moisturizer. So that's the backbone of what we're doing, helping guys understand that. Then there's one other thing in our basic system, which is an exfoliating scrub. So twice a week, you use our exfoliating scrub. Wednesdays and Sundays are my scrub days. It is Wednesday that we're talking today, so I used it this morning. And that's it. Wash your face with high quality face wash. Put a moisturizer on twice a day, morning and night. Scrub a couple times a week, and you 100% will see a difference in your skin. And then you can get into some anti-aging products like an eye cream or a serum. We have clay masks and retinol sticks, and we have some tinted moisturizers. And we have tons, hundreds of thousands of guys that are using those advanced products. And we have hundreds of thousands of guys that use our bar soaps, our deodorants, our below the belt powder, and our body washes and things of that nature. So we're really focused on the face, but we're helping guys build healthy skincare routines.
And you've got a special offer discount code for our listeners.
Yeah, I do. If you go to teach.com/thehowofbusiness, we have a 30% offer with a free gift. It is the best offer we have available. So try it if you get a chance. We'd love to get your feedback on how you like our products and our skincare routines.
And if you're not where you can write that down or remember that, then just go to the show notes page for this episode at The How of Business, and I'll have that link there to get that 30% discount. I'm excited about it, and thank you for sending me the sample box. It has all of those things that you mentioned, and so I'm excited to try those. All right. I'm always looking for a book recommendation. Give me one book here because of time that you would recommend to add to our list to think about reading.
Business book. I'm reading The Force Multiplier right now. It's about how you partner with your EA to maximize your potential during the day. The Force Multiplier. And non-business book. I just got finished reading The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. It's an inside view of inside from the German perspective of World War II. History's bound to repeat itself. I strongly encourage people to understand, the trials and tribulations of how we got into World War II and how megalomaniacs are coming to power. So The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich and Force Multiplier, awesome books.
Thank you. Appreciate those recommendations. I'll have a link to both of those as well on the show notes page. All right, let's summarize it. What's one thing, Kelly, from this conversation, especially as it relates to if I'm listening and thinking about building and scaling a company, what's one thing I would take away?
Well, here's a couple quick ones. Number one is you got to go for it. Anybody that tells you that it's a bad idea, you definitely should encourage you more to do it. But think about, how you're going to sell your product, how you're going to develop your product, how you're going to manufacture, how you're going to fund it. Most importantly, how are you going to sell it? And if you do bring partners in, which, that can uniquely improve the chances of the chances of your performance, but provide a specific skill set that can help you, in your business, then I strongly suggest that you develop a very clear roadmap up front into how you're going to engage with your partners and put it down on paper, and you'll end up with a good outcome over the years of working together.
Yeah, I love that. You're speaking to the choir here. Those are key points that I try to drive and speak to on this podcast. So thanks for sharing that. In particular, this concept of knowing how you're going to sell it. I always say it's one thing to have a good idea, but what you have to have to underlie it as a good business model. How will you take it to market? How will you sell it? And can you do so profitably? Yeah. And that's the key to having a higher probability for success. All righty. Tell us again where you want us to go online to find out more about Teej Chanley.
Yeah, go to teege.com. I'd love your feedback, any feedback at all. You can ping me on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find at Kelly, Kelley, Thornton, Thornton. I'm at LinkedIn, talk to a lot of people there. I publish content there every week. And my goal is solely to help other people think about business and try to give back. So, please connect with us at Tej Hanley at Tej.com and connect with me, Kelly Thornton. I'm interested in any type of feedback or questions you have.
Excellent. Kelly, wonderful conversation. Thanks for being so transparent and indulging all of my questions and sharing a lot of inspirational, actionable content here. Thanks for being with me today.
Thanks, Henry. Really enjoyed it.
This is Henry Lopez. Thanks for joining me on this episode of The How of Business. My guest again today is Kelly Thornton. I release new episodes every Monday morning, and you can find the show anywhere you listen to podcasts, but also at my The How of Business YouTube channel and at the website, thehowofbusiness.com. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for listening to The How of Business. For more information about our coaching programs, online courses, show notes pages, links, and other resources, please visit thehowofbusiness.com.